There have been several questions to me about, one, what do you mean when you say soul? And two, what do you mean when you say mystery school? Because there are a lot of, there are people who have had experiences in other mystery schools and who understand soul to be one thing and not another thing. So I thought I would give a presentation on what the alchemists called the philosophical egg, we could call the soul, and the what we could call the terrain of the soul or the structure of the soul, and it has to do with the idea of boundaries. Because boundaries are what the soul is all about. And in order to understand boundaries and the soul, it's necessary to go through a process. And that process has many names. So on the list over here, what Carl Jung called the process, what Maslow called the process, what Steiner calls it, what Christianity calls it, what's known in alchemy. And every mystery tradition has its own name for this process. So Carl Jung called it individuation. Maslow was self-actualization. Steiner calls it mystery wisdom. Christianity calls it the second birth. And in alchemy, it's the spirit embryo. And there are many other names. But all of these names are referring to a process that is undertaken by a person when they experience the limits of growth biologically. So before the age of 21, human beings are enabled to transform themselves through the forces of their biological imperative, the maturation of the body, adolescence, and the change of teeth, and all of these marks of physical development, standing, walking, speaking. These are all biologically supported neurological phenomena. Forming of myelinization in the nerves and then the dissolving of the myelin sheaths so that a different kind of processing can happen. All of this biology up to the age 21 is in support of change in your soul life. After 21, you pretty much have the equipment that you're going to have. And what starts to happen is the equipment starts to be challenged as you get older. You start losing vitality. You start losing enthusiasm because the dreams of youth get crucified on the cross of reality. That happens between the age of 30 and 33. It's the death of youth. Very often the death of idealism. And with the death of idealism at 33 comes a kind of urge in the soul to once again retain the ideal. This then becomes causes in the adult. Wherein the younger person, it's simply the world is my oyster. It's an ideal world. And of course I'm going to meet Mr. or Miss Wright, and of course I'm going to make my first million, and of course I'm going to be famous, and of course I'm going to be recognized, and I'll have a great family and a Volvo and a sheepdog. And then when the Volvo doesn't show up, or maybe it's a used Volvo, and the sheepdog is tearing up your lawn in the back, and your kids are driving you crazy, idealism of that dream comes into the reality of the dream, and then you have what could be called the wish to change. And the wish to change means that you need to go back into the biological side of your development and unmask the shadow elements so that eventually the God within you will be revealed to you. And prior to that, the God comes and visits you at night, but doesn't reveal. But after maturation, you need to take up your bed and walk. Your maturation after 21 years of age is not dependent upon your biology. As a matter of fact, your biology is working against your maturation because you're losing forces. You're losing power. You're losing mobility. You're losing the ability to form thoughts coherently, etc. Your senses are becoming dim. Huh? And as that happens, there is nothing biologically given to you to create new organs of perception. You start losing your organs of perception. So individuation is creating new organs of perception for the dimension that you are entering, which is death. Yeah, the eternal. So as you begin to approach the eternal, you need to develop organs of perception for how it is in that realm. That's called individuation, self-actualization, mystery wisdom, the second birth, the forming of the spirit embryo, etc., etc. It is a universally recognized process whereby all humans can either ignore it or begin to work with it. If you ignore it, you start to lose vitality, you become bitter, you become bored and estranged and whatever. You lose interest because it's just the same old, same old. And nothing cool is happening. My voice isn't changing to become cooler, and I'm not being more ripped when I look in the mirror. And, you know, if I ever was ripped, you know. So I never had that problem of being ripped, you know. So, but you lose other things. You have to ask people to repeat stuff all the time. Your arms aren't long enough to read the newspaper anymore. And so as that happens, you can either get upset or you can get to work. Getting to work means you go back into the space when your biology was forming and find out where the stuck places are. And you unravel them. Because all your beliefs and all the things that are preventing you from growing are things that you said to yourself that you would never do, and then you forgot while you were developing. While you still had body forces, you make all these vows, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to talk to my kids that way. And then you find out you're saying exactly what your parents said to you, and you find out you are the people who your mother warned you about. Don't hang out with people like this, and there you are. And you hear yourself saying stuff that you said you would never say. And believing things that you thought were totally bogus when you heard someone else believed it. Like God. So when that happens, you can either get upset or bored or angry or depressed or aggressive or a maniac for causes or whatever, or you can say, I need to change something in myself. And in the ancient world, there was a code name for that. It's called metanoia. Another word. Sorry about the words, but meta means change, metamorphosis, meta. Noia is from nous, the cognitive element in the soul. So metanoia means change your thinking. Okay, so I transform my thinking from the biologically driven thinking to thinking where it comes in contact with my spirit, because that's where I'm going. Moving away from the biological imperative in which I have no freedom to my spirit in which I have total freedom, but it freaks me out. So as Teilhard de Chardin said, we're not afraid of being failures, we're afraid of being great. The reason why we're afraid of being great is because we have to be responsible for things when we try to be great. Failure is easy. We go on the blame trip. But being great, who are we going to blame? The water cooler is not a fun place if everybody's great. Okay, so there's nothing to talk about. How are you today? Great. How are you today? Great. Whatever. I'm great. Okay. How are you today? Terrible. Oh, really? What happened? Right? So, yeah. So yesterday we did boundaries, and this is the philosophical egg. Oh, I forgot one here. This is the egg of Roberto Assagioli, another psychologist in the circle of Jung and Maslow and Freud. And he would call this psychosynthesis. He was the rebel. And he was the young guy in the circle that said, I'm going to go over here and do this. So this egg is a compendium of Jung and Steiner and Assagioli. So if you are an Assagioli buff, sorry about that. If you're a pure Steinerite, sorry about that. If you're a Jung expert, sorry about that. Okay, but what I've tried to do is take the parts in all of those that link and see if there's something in it. So if you are a buff in one of these, then we can talk. But I'm trying to give you a picture of the broadest aspect of metanoia.
Is Joseph Chilton Pierce in there too?
He uses elements of these, yeah. And in fact, a lot, you know, Deepak Chopra, even though he comes from over there, Eckhart Tolle, you know, there's a lot in the Byron Katie, there's a lot in the public domain that's talking about these ideas, but what this egg does is gives you a cosmology to fit it in. So his cosmic egg, cracking the cosmic egg, is kind of referring to this. Cosmic egg goes way back into alchemy. It's called the philosophical egg. And even beyond that, into Hildegard of Bingen and whatever, you can see pictures of this idea. It's a very old idea. This is Easter. Yeah, the egg, the Easter egg. Yeah, so the ancient world knew this, but now today we have it as a kind of image of what we could call the soul. So around the egg is what Jung called the collective unconscious. And that, when I am in that consciousness, I cannot in that consciousness say I to myself. I am one with everything. In the meditative work, when I am silent, I am in that realm. So in our work here, we always end up with rest for a moment and silence. That's the only part of the day where we have a meditation. The rest of the work is concentration or contemplation exercises to be able to build attention in such a way that we can have 15 seconds of meditation. The rest of the time is struggling to meditate. or practicing not meditating, so that maybe sometimes grace will come and you meditate. So technically, meditation is a totally silent consciousness. But the real key to meditation is how you go into that consciousness and how you come out. We could say, what are the boundaries that create or that surround that consciousness or contribute to that consciousness? And those boundaries have to do with how you are active or not in various parts of your soul. So if you look at the egg, you will see that the egg is surrounded by the collective. The collective is the source of all imaginations and myths and legends and patterns in nature and the way in which animals migrate and mating rituals and relationship between the predator and the prey and attraction between one molecule and another. All of these patterns are what Rudolf Steiner would call imaginations from the archetypal realm. And they come to us all the time, but we're usually not aware of them because we're living in a different part of the egg. So when I'm in meditation, I'm totally silent, I'm embedded in the all. I am one with all imaginations that could be. That's the collective. It's the realm of the archetypes. And the hierarchies and Michael and all of that, Demeter, they all live out there in that realm. But around me, as a person, I have formed a kind of shell that I use as a boundary to filter that experience of being one with everything. Because I can't be one with everything all the time. So as soon as I'm not one with everything, the question is anybody to blame? If somebody's to blame or somebody's guilty, then there are issues. Think Adam and Eve and snake. Okay, who's to blame? Who's the guilty? Who took the first bite? Who took the second bite? Who told the lie? Who the yada, 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 yada. The egg. The zone, the boundary, the place where the drama happens. Coming right from Adam and Eve. Adam, right kidney. Eva, left kidney. Pushed out of the garden. And there they are. Can I come home? Late and slow. Okay, so they get, so we have this drama. And in order to deal with the drama, we have around us a zone where we say me. When I'm one with everything, me is sort of a relative term. Sort of, huh? So as soon as I say me, I'm in an egg. That's not part of everything, but it's a permeable egg. So on the bottom of the permeable egg, we have the imaginations that have come from my biological development that have formed my organism and its appetites and all the patterns in it of digestion and excretion and movement and sensitivity, where I'm sensitive to things. And where I'm sensitive to things is, in the language of psychology, the subconscious unconscious. It's the place where stuff happens and then I respond, but I'm not aware of it. So right now you're having events having to do with your breakfast. You're having a little battle with your breakfast and hopefully you're going to win. So when you have a little battle with your breakfast, It's not in your awake consciousness unless there's a dysfunction. And if there's a dysfunction, you could care less about what I'm saying right now. Because the focus of your awake state is down in the subconscious unconscious because one of the patterns is not operating well. Your consciousness goes there and wants to know what's happening. We call it pain. So pain is the arising of a pattern that comes from the archetypal realm through the unconscious into my subconscious as a pattern. And it also includes emotional pain that gets grandfathered in when I can't deal with sensations that come to me between birth and the age of 21. Certain sensations happen and I grandfather in attitudes towards those sensations. It might be the sound of my mother's voice telling me you're never going to amount to something, and I make a vow. I'm never going to X. Or my father, you know, whatever. I am the king, you are nothing. You come into my realm, you die. Well, I'm never going to... This is the way to solve a man solves a problem. Okay, I'm never... And unfortunately, my gallbladder has to go to the fat. So every time my gallbladder lights off, it remembers the vow that I said, I'm never going to do that. And the gallbladder goes, I don't think I want to do that. And then later we call it bad digestion. Yeah? Subconscious pictures that get placed into us as what are known in psychology as subpersonality fragments. They are fragments of personality patterns that are searching for a self, for an I being. They are Isis searching for the piece, or Isis searching for the pieces of Osiris. Okay, I'm on a journey to myself. So as I go on the journey, I have to deal with the fragments. But unfortunately, unless I actually consciously go back and deal with the fragments, they just pop up through the bottom of the egg whenever they need a little energy, which is whenever I get around situations that seem to remind me of the original time I made the vow. It could be the tone or the atmosphere or a particular food or who knows what, my goodness gracious, you know, humans. And then I'm not me anymore as an I person. I am a fraction of a personality searching for meaning. And in order to have that happen, I have to go back to the fragment of the personality and go, what's the issue? What are you trying to tell me? How can I benefit from this? Or what do you need? You know, what would you like? So it's just what you do with your kid. They're bugging you, going crazy. What do you need? Finally, it's 3 a.m. What do you need? What do you need? Just tell me. We'll see if we can work it out. So I go back in myself and find one of them, an issue, and say, what does this thing need? What is temporal? And what is it trying to teach me about my whole self? What's eternal? And I just ask it. What's eternal about this and what's temporal? This is called disputation. I ask myself, do I really need to have this little personality fragment dominating all the energy in my life? Or can I talk to it and say, where are you in my life? Just like you would with a kid. Where are you bugging me? Or your cat. Hello, cat. You'll be fed. You're always fed. Get a life.
Is there anything eternal about these personality subfragments, or are they all?
That's a great question. So if you look, the egg here on the bottom is permeable. And then there's a space here in the middle that I've designated as mind. That's another part of the soul. This lower part of the subconscious, Rudolf Steiner calls sentient soul. Sensitive soul. Sensory soul.
Steiner calls the subconscious sentient soul.
Yes. Yes. In sentient soul, I am simply sensitive. And my life consists of stimulus response patterns. Here's the stimulus. My response is, I always, I never. A stimulus. Question, a situation, a food, whatever. Person, stimulus. My response is this. And those responses that happen that way are the source of what are known as self-sabotage. Self-sabotage is when I tell myself something over and over and over and over. I can never, I will never, I always, they always. You're going along and a voice will come up, that was stupid.
That favorite word, stupid.
Stupid. That was stupid. It was like, who said that? This is some personality fragment that got a little lonely. It's looking for a little hit of your attention. Okay? And then there you go. Oh, I must be stupid. That's self-sabotage. And the healing of that is to have a dialogue with that voice and say, do I need you to be in my life at this time? In that way. It's called disputation. It comes from the work of a psychologist called Martin Seligman. Psychology of happiness. Okay? It's about, do I have to tell myself this? Or can I stop and say, do I have to tell myself this? Oh, there I did it again. Oh, and I did it again. Oh, I did it again. Dang. Who's doing that? And the one that says, who is doing that, is living in this center part of the egg where the boundary between above and below happens, in the realm of the mind soul, or sometimes called intellectual soul. And in the mind soul, there is a kernel, a seed of what Carl Jung called the true self, and what Steiner called the I being. And that seed has in it, or is surrounded by, another layer of more evolved personality structures that, you know, I meet people and I can be nice and whatever. I've evolved certain parts of my personality that I speak through in order to get through the day. And then embedded in them is my true self that's watching whether or not that works. And those personalities at that level are then masks. I simply put them up in order to get through the day. But behind the mask is a kind of curious combination of subpersonality fragments and my true self looking at my destiny. It's a kind of uneasy marriage there in the mind. Am I what I tell myself, or am I who I wish to be? Do I have any potential in my life, or have I exhausted it? As, you know, Suzuki Roshi says, life's like buying a ticket for a boat that you know is going to leave the pier and sink. Are you okay with that? Because it is. And it's, you know, we say, oh, that's kind of weird. Yeah, well, tell a melancholic a sad story. And then they get happy. Because they're not the only one that's a melancholic then. Okay, so in my mind, I have a task. And the task is to move the center of my mind from the border that's close to the subconscious unconscious to the border where it's close to the superconscious unconscious. Because humans have capacity in their true self to intuit their true destiny patterns. Why they came back. Their mission. And the crazy thing about when a person intuits their mission, it has nothing to do with being in large groups of people or people believing what you do. The more you intuit your mission, the more you are kind of plowing through the ice in an icebreaker. And the task is to make your mission universal when it's very specific to you. And that task is a task that Asajjoli studied when he studied genius and inspiration. Because he said that when the center of my personality begins to move through my true self, moves it more towards the superconscious unconscious, I begin having pictures of things that I remember that I said to myself, I wish to do this. And the world goes, I don't think so. Because what you're bringing is like weird. And down here, if someone tells you what you're bringing is weird, you go into a funk. But if you're living up here a little more, someone tells you you're weird, you go, join the club. What's the difference? The difference is that when I'm up in my mind is more in the superconscious unconscious, I have enthusiasm for situations that are hopeless. Which is the mark of the person that makes changes. So if I don't do this work, as I get older and my forces start to wane, I move into blame and guilt as the two kind of oscillations in my soul. Somebody's guilty, and it's either me, guilt, or you, blame. But that simply is saying I have no power in my life to change something. And unfortunately, past 21, no one can give you the power. No guru, or if they do, there's always a little hidden clause, you owe me. So in the past, there was ways to get around it. You had power reservoirs, I'll give you my special rattle. And if you use this rattle, you are way cool. And then you use the rattle and you're way cool. And then you die and you find out that there was a hidden surcharge on the rattle having to do with what you owe that person in the next life. And then you come in the next life and you want to be free, but you have this debt that, and you know why. You know, and that was the power corrupts the mystery schools. So the difficulty with the way the old mystery schools were in a tribal consciousness was that the teachers taught you how to make reservoirs of power. And that has to change. And the reason it has to change is because power corrupts people. And in order to that the mysteries have to correct all of that, there's been a shift. And we'll talk about that later when the shift happened. But we're expected now to be in a different part of the mind so we can get access to consciousness. Rudolf Steiner calls the superconscious unconscious consciousness soul. It's another part of the soul, but it's a part of the soul that's focused on the activity of the spirit as it is acting in my life. The subconscious unconscious is focused on the sensitivities that I have in my life about who is winning and who is not. My mind can go either way. So my mind can either be totally obsessed with who did what to whom, then I get ethnic cleansing. Because your great 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 grandfather killed my great 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 grandfather. Therefore, I have to firebomb your house. That's down in subconscious unconscious. And that needs to change. And as it changes, people, instead of, you know, it's us against you guys, start to be more individual. And the difficulty with being more individual is that I'm more individual, which makes me a little prone to being antisocial. So in the lower part of the egg, in the subconscious unconscious, I look for other people to be with me, and we become a group, and then we become whatever, and then we go over the hill and take your cows from you. In the higher part of the egg, when I'm in my mind, we form philosophical groups that keep you out. You become more and more and more insular, and power gets focused more and more into smaller and smaller groups, trilateral commissions and whatever. So we're seeing, and then when that happens and we have two or three people running the whole world economically, then we have what's known as the war of each against all. Rudolf Steiner talks about it. And the healing of the war of each against all is I have to, out of my superconscious unconscious, my antisocial quality of finding my individuality, I have to offer my individuality to you. Buddha then called that the bodhisattva. And what I offer to you is my freedom of attention, which is all any of the beings in any part of the egg want. It's just about attention. Where I put my attention is what develops. So if I put my attention down in the subconscious unconscious into self-limiting statements or self-sabotaging statements, that's what my life's made out of. So I practice taking one of them and watching how many times it appears in a day or in an hour. And just take a little note of it and say, why do I keep telling myself this? It's a very good question. And as you do, you start to build, your mind starts to move away from the addiction to the energy of the subconscious unconscious up into the mind proper, where you realize, oh my God, I do have a mind that I can change. That's a pretty radical thought. And then finally, my mind is actually connected to a higher realm of functioning, a creative realm of functioning, where there's no blame for anything. And that's a scary place. If I'm up here in superconscious unconscious and I have an experience that there's no blame and I made a vow to myself, I have to really pay attention to the fact that there's no blame, because I find I'm in blaming a lot. And then I'm say, no blame. And then suddenly situation comes and I'm desperate to blame. I just really want to blame. I can watch myself oscillate between being a bodhisattva and an also-ran. Also ran, you know, in the sports things. It's the people that finish are up here, and then they have a little comma that says, also ran, means like he was in the race, but whatever. Whatever. Oh, he had a number and a tracksuit on, but he wasn't a real player, you know. Yeah. So I and the crazy thing about it is I'm the one who decides whether I'm a player or an also ran. I decide that. Nobody can decide that for me. Ask Donald Trump if he's happy. You know? Ask all these big hotshots if they're happy. No, they're not happy. They have all the power and all the money and they're still not happy. So it's what makes us happy, what makes us productive, what makes us large. That's really the question of individuation. So Sajoli says the purpose of the individuation or psychosynthesis is to remove obstacles in my life. And this is the task of the mystery school since the absolute very beginning. Just get rid of a few obstacles. It's okay. You know, you're not going to be Buddha all of a sudden, but you may find you have some talents that have been slumbering under the shoulda, coulda, woulda consciousness. That, and then your friends go, wow, how about that? Where'd you pick that up? Well, you know, this kind of came to me one day. Well, I like it. It's pretty good. Yeah, that's how it is. So the egg here, when I'm in superconscious unconscious, I'm unconscious. But my unconscious is functioning at a very high level of integration. It's because I'm not wasting energy blaming and being guilty. I'm just looking for where can the difference be made? Where can a change happen here? That's different from finding out who's to blame through cause and effect. I can tell you, I grew up in a blame and shame mastery school. And somebody's to blame for everything. And over the years, for whatever reason, my path has been to show me that that was not in my best interest. And then I found Jung and Seligman and Assagioli and Steiner and Goethe and started to find that they were all talking about the same thing. They were all talking about the same thing. They had different ways of describing the layers and the boundaries, but they were talking about the same issue, which is, as Christ put it, take up your bed and walk. Meaning, you can change yourself. It's not fun, but it's very useful. Because as you get older, if you don't do it, then it's much less than fun. And you find, and Steiner says, the better person us is putting big rocks right in the front of our bicycle. And then we come back on the bicycle, who put that rock there? And then we get around that one, and then the true self puts another rock there. Who put that rock there? I'm going to find out who it is, because somebody's to blame for this. And then from the big picture, it's us. We were putting the rock in there so we can say, I need to look at who's putting the rock there. Instead of blaming, just say, why do I need the rock? And I find the rock is covering my gift. I pull the rock off. There's a little treasure box in there. I open it up and it says, you. It's like, whoa. Where'd that come from? Well, it's always been there. It just was covered over with beliefs that wouldn't allow it to come up into the light of day.
What's the relationship between the unconscious and the permeability of the where they're not me to this process?
Between the unconscious, did you say the first part?
The unconscious is where you have that moment of silence. What's happening in that to this process of developing oneself?
There is a gradient in that. Starting with when I first try to be silent, and my center of my mind is closer to the subconscious unconscious, all kinds of stuff comes percolating up through the sewer system. So as soon as I try to stop and do this, the first thing that comes up is, I can't do this. First thing. Oh, I'm stupid, or I could never do this, or mom was right, or whatever. It's the first thing that comes up. And it has to come up because basically I've just lifted the lid off the sewer by being silent. So as soon as I'm silent, it says, okay, party on, say the subpersonality fragments. He's not home. Let's party. Grandma left. Let's go upstairs and trash the kitchen. Okay, so they come up and all you can see in your consciousness is all the dark little components that you know are not you. And then you go, oh, geez, there it comes. So the best thing to do is to put your gloves on and hold your nose and grab one of the little suckers. And pull it up and go, hello, what are you doing in my life? And it's squirming around and doing its thing and trying to go booga, 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 but it's only this little thing. So you say, whoa. You know, it's like your two-year-old throwing a tantrum. Okay, we'll go out of Target here, but we're going to work this out in the car. It's not like you win. Okay, whatever, honey. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's only a fragment. It's only a fragment in search of meaning. And the meaning is, can I get away with this? If I can get away with it, hey, cool. I get to use this person's body and their part of their mind I get access to, and I just live my day. I'm satisfied. We're talking about beings, because you are fundamentally a condo. You are not just me. You are an assemblage of consciousnesses. Goethe said, the human being is all the animals together guided by an angel.
Say that again?
All the animals together guided by an angel is a human. The thing about nature is there's no blame. But in humans, predator and prey moves into blame. That's because we have a potential for moral judgment. So when the tiger eats Bambi, no blame. Right? No blame. But if I'm involved in it somehow, then we get to blame. Because the human has a different task than the tiger.
So
and Bambi.
Blame is a confusion about your moral...
Yes.
Stance.
Issues, yes. And the moral issues are colored by what comes up through the permeations in the bottom of the egg to begin with. But if I keep practicing silence, each time I do, I'll grab one of the little guys down there and I dialogue with it a little bit. But don't get the big one that's down there spewing all this. Just pick a little lieutenant, you know, and say, why are you in my life? Why are you in my life? And eventually it goes, whatever. All it's looking for is attention. If you give it attention, it won't grab attention. You know, the three-year-old, mom, yes, look, mom, what? They don't want anything, they want attention. Why? Because you're talking to your friend. Yeah, because attention is what all the beings want. That's when we are our true self, shining star of the cosmos, we are a being of total attention. And all the ones that come near to us just get the download of attention. Wow! Because we are attention. That's who we are. We are an active attention. The human, the true self. But down here in my soul, I'm just a container of past experiences. When I'm up here in my superconscious, I'm an activity. I'm still my soul.
So does that also apply when you go from waking into sleeping?
Yes, because that's the boundary crossing.
Yeah.
And where there are boundaries, there is energy.
Because there's some beings there that are at our place.
Absolutely. This is not being able to go to sleep or not being able to wake up or whatever.
Yeah.
All kinds of, because going to sleep and waking up is the place where the esotericist gets control over the process. In your day awake state, when you're doing digesting and trying to listen to a lecture, you're busy. But when you cross the boundary into sleep and come back into wake, that's where you can prepare your soul to create pictures that are healing for you.
How about that state where in sleep, where you still have the witness?
That's,
what's going on then?
Well, that's the boundary. So the work of finding the boundary and learning how the gradient works on either side of the boundary is the big issue with the soul. What leads to the boundary from one side and what leads to the boundary from the other side, and how do they interact to create this zone? The zone in between waking and sleeping is dreaming. So when you eat a banana, you are dreaming. And in that dream are all kinds of beliefs. Eat a banana and then eat a banana split. And ask yourself, what's the difference in my dreaming? What am I saying to myself? What kind of values am I bringing? What kind of echoes from the past am I carrying over? What happens then to my digestion after, you know? It's in those zones where, and you may not be able to do a blessed thing about your banana split addiction. Okay, whatever, but watch it. Watch it. You could watch it for 15 years and not be able to do anything about it, and then one day you wake up and it's gone. Wow. Where'd it go? The energy that was going to resisting it is now a capacity to do something. That's where the energy goes. It's yours to begin with, but it's locked because you're giving it to someone else. So when I go asleep and I wake up and I start to practice taking a picture into sleep and taking a picture waking up, I actually become aware during the day of how I'm subtly going in and out of sleeping and waking. That's called mind soul. I start to watch how my consciousness fluctuates during the day. And then I'll find a spot where I say something to myself. And then I grab it and I say, I just said this. I just said this. I just said this. Okay? Now, to help us do that, I have a little fun tool for you. This is a little filter. It's called a mask filter. And as we do our work, I will just suggest to you that the mask filter is a way for you to filter into the constant fluctuation of images and feelings and stuff. A way to say, I'm going here. Oh, this is what that feels like. So these are little emoticons that are meant to be neutral of feelings that arise out of sentient soul into mind and then create a little mood in the mind of, oh, this is what's happening. What I found over the years is that if you can identify with a picture the mood of what is said, then when it happens during the day, if you take a weekend, go to the coast with your mask filter and say, today I'm just going to, every time it happens, I'm just going to write down. And take a sheet of paper and you'll probably get writer's cramp.
What are you writing?
When the mask shows up.
So you just write the number of the mask?
The number.
The thought?
The number.
Just write the number of the
mask? Just write the number, number nine, and then move on. Oh, number nine. Move on. Oh, number nine. Move on. Number nine. Move on. Number nine. Eventually, number nine becomes, you start to recognize that it's a source of what is known as irritation. Irritation is the tool that we need to find. What irritates me? And can I find a mask that fits it? If I can do that, I have a very powerful tool for hooking something that's coming up through the bottom of the egg and saying, what are you doing in my life? Do I need you in my life? What are you trying to tell me? If you get one of them and you talk to them, what are you trying to tell me? They usually are trying to go, oh, but they're to blame and blah. And then you say, no, well, what are you trying to tell me? Why are you here? Eventually, your attention heals that and moves it to silence. So if you have a practice of trying to get to silence in morning and the evening, the silence in your practice starts to enhance your ability to recognize silence. I know it sounds strange, but it's a really big issue. When am I really silent? Can I go there? 30 seconds of silence, morning and evening, has a tremendous effect on your inner life. 30 seconds. And it doesn't even have to be consecutive seconds. It could be 30 seconds out of 15 minutes of trying to have 30 seconds. But over time, a sense of what silence is slowly builds so that I recognize the difference between when I am silent and when I am speaking out of blame or guilt.
What's the difference between zoning out and silence?
Between what?
Zoning out and silence.
Zoning out, you usually have all kinds of stuff going on behind. Your mind is preoccupied with the movements of the subpersonality elements. You think it's silent because it's just du jour, consciousness du jour. But if you actually stopped and looked at it, you find you're plotting and all kinds of dramas in that zoning out, what we call zoning out. True silence is very rare and very difficult. Because you're actually watching yourself not
scary.
Be silent. Well, if it's scary, I'll ask you, what number is that?
Well,
if it's scary, pick a number. If it's weird, pick a number. If it's just kind of make me feel bad, pick a number. So if you pick a number, when you get silent and it's scary and the same number keeps coming up on your bingo card, suddenly you have someone to dialogue with. And when you have someone to dialogue with, you find a story in which the gradients from above and below start moving towards the mind. So in our little story that I handed out a little bit ago, there was a story about a lady interacting with a god. And there was a space where there was a boundary between them where an event happened. All myths have that kind of patterning because they're a picture of the philosophical egg, of the issues of what are my boundary issues. Psyche, nous, soul, is in search of the God within and has curiosity about the God within. But the God within has said, no, you don't really want to know, because if you do, you'll be upset. Why would psyche be upset to find the God within? Because as soon as she found it, there was guilt. Guilt because she kind of said, he'll be okay with this. I'll just shine my light of my intellect on my God within. And what comes up is, oh, wow, he's really handsome. Sorry, I'm out of here. Oh, man. Dang. Psyche and Eros. The picture. So I can take a picture of the gradient that Eros is working for his mom, because she's got issues. And Psyche's working for her sisters, because they've got issues. And then we have this little boundary in between. The two gradients meet, and there's some energy there. And then there has to be a reconciliation. What reconciles it? Fate. He happens to show up, and she's on the road. Oh, I remember how it used to be. I'm going to go talk to my dad. So Psyche then eventually becomes immortal. That's a picture of the journey. The mind approaches consciousness through what? Eros. Through first sexual love, Eros. Through philia, brotherly love, to agape, the love of the deed. So as we start to move through Eros to philia to agape, we're moving the center of my personality higher, guided by my true self, to eventually reveal in myself the God within.